that if there weren't any more black students at Columbia than there were at Oxy, I'd at least be in the heart of a true city with black neighborhoods in close proximity. Reading Obama's books, we realize how little he has in common with the Reagan Democrats who gravitated to the Republican Party. Coming out of the turmoil, the 1960s and 1970s, Reagan Democrats of the 1980s were attracted to Ronald Reagan's brand of conservatism, while McGovern Democrats moved even farther to the left. Obama's disdain of Reagan is obvious when he explains in The Audacity of Hope that he rejected Reagan for his John Wayne, Father Knows Best pose, his policy by anecdote, and his gratuitous assaults on the poor. Yet for many of the youthful voters Obama wants to attract, the 1960s and its radicalism are merely a distant history from a time before they were born. For others of us, the radicalism of the 1960s and 1970s calls forth images of Malcolm X and William Ayers, extremists we continue to reject for their anti-American views, just as we rejected them four decades ago. Chicago Southside is the home of Comiskey Park and the Chicago White Sox baseball team. The Southside is also where roving mobs of blacks and whites attacked one another in the race riot during the summer of 1919, the most violent of the post-World War I race riots that swept some 20 American cities. Before the violence ended in Chicago, 23 blacks and 15 whites were killed, and more than 500 had been injured. In the 1960s, Chicago's South Side came to symbolize the hardened ghetto segregation and poverty that derived from the income inequality and racial discrimination experienced from generations of Northern white racism. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. found the racism he faced in Chicago more severe than he had expected. On August 5, 1966, King led a march through Marquette Park and Chicago Lawn, two predominantly white suburbs on Chicago's southwest side. Getting out of a car to join the march, King was struck in the head and knocked down by a rock as big as a fist. With white hecklers continuing to taunt and assault the marchers, King picked himself up and kept going. After the march, King told reporters, "I can assure you that the hatred and hostility here in Chicago are really deeper than what I have seen in Alabama and Mississippi." For two decades after King's death, the legacy of institutionalized Southside racism drew to Chicago a cadre of liberal community organizers, including Obama, who were committed to using the principles of change first developed in Chicago during the 1930s by Chicago-born, self-styled agitator Saul Alinsky. Obama proclaimed in his autobiography, "In 1983, I decided to become a community organizer. His only explanation was, I'll organize black folks at the grassroots for change." In trying to explain what he meant by change, Obama said that organizing the African-American community could be, for him, a redemption. Thinking back to the sit-ins, the marches, the jailhouse songs, the civil rights meetings, Obama imagined the African-American community becoming more than just the place where you'd been born or the house where you'd been raised. Through organizing and shared sacrifice, Obama imagined that he would finally find membership in a community, membership he could feel he had earned. When classmates in college asked me just what it was that a community organizer did, I couldn't answer them directly, he wrote. Instead, I'd pronounce on the need for change. Change in the White House, where Reagan and his minions were carrying on their dirty deeds. Change in the Congress, compliant and corrupt. Change in the mood of the country, manic and self-absorbed. Change won't come from the top, I would say. Change would come from immobilized grassroots. In Dreams for My Father, Obama tells the story of how in 1985, he responded to a job advertisement he saw in the newspaper, that somehow Marty Kaufman, Obama's fictional name for Jerry Kelman, answered. Obama said Kelman telephoned him and explained he'd started an organizing drive in Chicago and was looking to hire a trainee. The Calumet Community Religious Conference was trying to convert the black churches of Chicago's South Side into agents of social change and was looking for a community organizer to run the inner city arm of the project, the Developing Communities Project. After Obama replied to the ad, so the story goes, Kelman showed up in New York and interviewed Obama, offering him a job on the spot. This version, however, has the feel of being too lucky to be true. In The Audacity of Hope, Obama mentions in passing that in 1984, he had just graduated from college and was working as a community organizer out of the Harlem campus of the City College of New York. In the 1980s, Jerry Kelman was a well-known figure in community organization. In 1985, Kelman got the $25,000 he needed to hire someone like Obama from Gene Rudd at the Woods Fund, a Chicago foundation that gives grants for community organizing. It is doubtful Kelman would have driven from Chicago to New York just to meet a newly graduated college kid who wrote a letter looking for a job. More likely, he went to New York to see if the reports coming out of New York City about Obama were right, that Obama's profile might just fit in with Kelman's organization. In an article titled